Here on WBAI, 99.5 FM on your dial. I get so much to pay attention to. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And today is terrific. Terrific. We collected such an amazing amount of information. New stuff. Do you ever wonder, what is it that sets off these different things in our lives? What gets you angry? What really gets you angry? And why do you get angry? Do you get angry? Well, we're learning more and more and more about it. We're learning why we get angry. We're learning how we get angry. We're learning what makes it happen. So, new information about this. Stephanie Dumbra in the studio with me today. Stephanie, new chemistry, yeah?
Yeah, there's always new information that's coming out, and it's fascinating information to help us understand our behavior and ourselves.
From Spain, the place of the World Cup soccer, and Wimbledon, and visits by young children. From Valencia comes this information. New investigation led by scientists from the University of Valencia that analyzes the change of the brain's cardiovascular, hormonal, and asymmetrical activation response when we get angry. What is it? We always thought one or another thing, but why do we get angry? Two things I have in life. Why would you ever get angry? I know a man who's being sued for divorce by his wife. And she is very angry at him. And everybody asks him, well, aren't you angry what she's doing? But he says, no, I don't feel angry. I don't feel angry. They said, boy, you should get angry. He says, but I don't feel angry. And when asked how many things in life he gets angry at, he doesn't have many things he gets angry at in life. Because he's one of these guys who say, you know, it can't be that big. So maybe something that happens as you get older is you find less and less reason to get angry. So our question is, why do we get angry, right? What's it do for us? We have all kinds of theories about it, but some new chemical theories, which is that when we get angry, the heart rate, the arterial tension, and the testosterone production increases. Cortisol decreases when we get angry. Now remember, cortisol is the stress hormone. And the left hemisphere of the brain becomes more stimulated. Now, what does this do for us? What is the meaning of this?
Well, isn't that new information right there, Armand?
Sure, go ahead.
I think people assumed that anger is partly stress, a stress reaction, and that their cortisol levels would increase. But this is even new to me to hear that cortisol decreases. So there's more to this than we understood.
Yeah, much more to it. Part of what we're seeing is that we're going to just talk about cortisol. Cortisol is the stress hormone that we have. Now, I'm going to go back to serotonin for a minute. We know that drops in serotonin, that means when people have serotonin, which is kind of a mood stabilizer of our neurotransmitters, it's a good thing. The more serotonin you got, well, up to a certain level, but the more peaceful you are. Drops in serotonin, which happen around women's cycles, and when that happens, they get irritable. Or when different things happen during menopause, irritability. Or with men, there's irritability. But that's a drop in the serotonin. Cortisol is a thing that we produce that makes up for the absence of serotonin. So we produce cortisol And so that's why we get stressful, you know? In other words, now we're starting to learn that stress has a purpose. If you're feeling lost, if you're feeling like you're getting a drop in serotonin, you feel a kind of a mood sinking. You're sinking. You're kind of like getting, going down an abyss. You don't like the way it feels. You feel cloudy. You feel moody. Well, this is nature's solution. Get irritable. Get irritable and then find the target and attack it. This is nature's solution. Here's what nature says. Stress is the beginning of anger. Stress is a precursor to anger. And by stress, by getting stressful, will increase your cortisol, which is your like make-believe serotonin. Now, the trouble with that is it doesn't work because you can't keep it up. You can't keep stress up for that long. And it doesn't really work. But it's nature's immediate attempt. Now, let's talk about what stress is. And this is something that I found rather amazing. When one senses that one's goal is being blocked, the something is perceived as a stressor. So what is a stressor? A stressor is something that's getting in your way. Just think about it. You're driving on a highway. Somebody cuts you off. You get stressed, you get angry. Why? Because your goal was interrupted. Now, if you're in a loose frame of mind and you're driving on a highway and somebody interrupts you, you put on the brakes, you take it easy, you say they may be in a hurry. But if you need to get that little purge of both a stressor and followed by anger, you react. So here's what we're learning. Anger is a cure. It's a self-imposed cure for our loss of self. A loss of self in the form of depression, lower serotonin, mood kind of going down. Angry people who get angry, usually get angry by introducing a stressor. Now, what do you mean by stressor? They blame somebody else. It's your fault. They may be talking, they may be doing something, and you ask them a question. Yeah, you ask me that question right now. How could you ask me that? Look, I told you never before, don't ask me those questions. The reaction is so big that the person who had the reaction, if I had that reaction, and I sometimes do, I ask myself, what am I reacting such a big reaction for? It's because my body is saying, somewhere behind me, there's a kind of a sadness I don't want to sink into. There's a low feeling I don't want to sink into. Maybe it's hormonal, maybe it's chemical, maybe it's physical. But this trigger, this reaction, is one of nature's way of solving this mood. Now think about it in prisons. Anger is constant in prisons. It's constantly there. Tension is constantly there. You produce a society in a prison where you have to watch your stuff all the time. In a way, keeping everybody at an edge so that they don't sink into the despair of what it's like being locked up for a period of time in your life. Armand DeMille, Stephanie Dombra. Now, there's more about this research that's very important. In fact, there's an enormous amount about this. Stressors can be both external or internal. External stresses are the source of stress that we are aware of around us. Those stresses are things that create a situation of perceived threat. So you get a letter from the IRS, a stressor, right? Somebody reports something to you, a stressor. Somebody says there's a sign of danger, a stressor. Now, external stressors will only hit you as much as you are sensitive to external stressors. If you are an overreactive person, That means you're going to take on a letter from the IRS and let it mean the end of your life. It's going to be a disaster. You're going to overreact. So people who overreact are people who need to be stressed and angry because it is saving them from their depression or from their slide in mood. Depression's a heavy word, but people who are premenstrual know what that's like when they get to that point where they sink all the way down. Anything that constrains our freedom of expression, anything that is perceived as limiting us, becomes a place that we could perceive as a stressor. Two people were kidding around the other day, and somebody said it was, I think it was in response to one of the movies. Oh, no, it was a radio show we did yesterday about dominance, about a dominatrix. And a guy told me, he said, his wife said to him, I should shackle you. I should tie you up and see what that's like. And he said, well, it'd be fun. Because he wouldn't perceive that as a thing. Of course, most people would. So you respond to stressors only in accordance to your need to respond to stressors. One of the tests they give you very often when going through school, if you're trying to get a PhD in clinical psychology, or if you're trying to get an MD, or you're trying to get advanced degrees, the schools stress you way beyond what they need to, especially law degrees, because they want to know the following. They want to know you could handle the stress. Because if you can't handle it, if you overreact, nobody wants you on their team. Take a look at the borderline person. Borderline person. People who perpetually respond to stress with an overwhelmed sense of anger. Now, borderline personality is known for their amount of aggression that they feel. They display frantic attempts to avoid a real or imagined abandonment. Abandonment becomes their theme. If they could sense abandonment, they're going to become very stressed and very angry. And they start screaming and get angry. And you could always look when you see somebody who's a borderline in an abandonment, in a place of rage. You could always look for abandonment. Where is that issue coming up? They may do anything. They could stalk you. They could hunt you down. They could obsess about you. But that's what happens. There's a pattern of highly unstable relationships with people who need this anger in their lives. You can either need it on the receiving end, meaning you marry somebody who always gets angry, and then you're always in reaction to it, or you are somebody who's always angry. Anger feeds itself. So I'm saying that there's a positive chemical response in the human body having to do with anger. Not what I like. I don't think it's positive psychologically. I think it's prehistoric. I think it's primitive. I think it's kind of, I wish we would get rid of it. But you can understand it. Nowadays, when I see people raging, or I see myself raging, a part of me is observing it and saying, this is not real. This is just a need to produce some kind of a sense of self that doesn't have to do with the issue that we're talking about. Now, the main thing is the issue is never the issue. You've heard of people who blame. People blame other people. You did this, you did that. I know any number of people out there have reported to me how they hear that from their mates. You did this and you did that. The person who you use, right, the person who does perpetual blaming is somebody who is addicted to anger. They're using it as a reason to get angry. If they weren't using it, they'd be saying, they'd be saying, this is what's happening inside me, and they'd be feeling more vulnerable. You is an addiction to anger, meaning it's the only way I could get out of myself. Now, there's other advantages to anger and rage, because, again, as I said, it raises testosterone. For many couples, they use anger and rage as their precursor to sex. they get all heated up. They get lots of feelings with all this stuff flying around. Testosterone, both for men and women. You know, there's a common mistake, Stephanie. People think that women don't feel testosterone because it's a male hormone.
Well, it is a mistake. We have testosterone just like men, but in much smaller quantities. And ours increase as well, even when we're angry or when we're aroused. So it works the same way, but just at a much smaller scale.
If you were completely absent of testosterone, what would it be like for a woman to have none?
I think many people describe it as having no vitality. That's often a word I hear when people describe it. It's related to sex drive, just as the other hormones are for women. But strictly speaking, for men, I think that the testosterone is really related to the aggression, the kind of dominance and sex drive.
What I'm asking about is women.
Well,
if a woman doesn't feel testosterone at all, she feels flat or depressed?
That's a hard thing to really say. I guess it's, again, it could be related to sex drive, but there's many components. There's the sense of energy, a sense of vitality for both males and females.
If you wanted to have a fight with somebody, if you had to have a fight with your sister over something, you know, if you got testosterone more available, you will have a bigger fight. Is that not true?
I think generally speaking.
So one of the things that testosterone does is it allows you the fuel for fire, for the fire of an argument. You see, it's a thing. Now, we're not down on testosterone. It's an important hormone. But it does allow you the fuel to fight with.
But the fighting increases it.
Absolutely.
So that's the kind of funny thing.
So it's perpetual.
It's increasing it, and maybe the body knows this and says, let's fight so we can increase the testosterone.
Exactly right. So let's increase it on both of us, man and woman, and we have a fight, and we produce a fight, and then we make up. And they talk about make-up sex is the best sex ever, is what a lot of people say, because all of these juices are running through your body. Now, we're not just talking about sex. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind with Stephanie Dombrow. We're talking about stressors and anger and how we produce them. There is more information they learned about anger that is just remarkable about the chemistry of anger. And this relates to the right hemisphere and left hemisphere. Do you know what I'm talking about, Steph?
Well, I saw it in the article, yes. This is new information, too.
What is it?
Let's see what it says.
By focusing on the asymmetric brain activity, there are two models to contradict the case of anger. The first model of emotional valence. Now, valence we're going to talk about. The left frontal region of the brain is involved in positive emotions. The right is more related to negative emotions. You got that? Left brain, positive emotions. Right brain, negative emotions. Now, in the past, when we thought about the left brain, what did we always think of? As far as emotional versus intellectual?
Well, I think it's usually that the left brain is related to language and thinking.
And the right brain
is emotional.
Is emotional. But what they're finding is the emotional of the right brain is the negative emotional.
Yeah, this is.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
that's fascinating.
I think things are coming up that are actually not contradicting, but all the things we understand are not that cut and dry.
What we understood was like this gross picture, and they're beginning to break it down. So what they used to call the intellectual part of the brain versus the emotional part of the brain, they were really talking about the negative emotional part of the brain. See, all the rage and everything is right-sided, whereas on the left side, you get the what happens, I guess, when you think through, when you calm yourself down. But this is the information that's coming out. Right brain, left brain. Positive emotions like happiness are usually associated with another emotive, a motivation of closeness. And the negative ones of fear and sadness are for withdrawal. So fear and sad, you move away. Happiness related to closeness. Anger is a way of staying connected. When you're angry with somebody, you're connected with them, and it's a form of closeness. Even though, you know, you may be angry at somebody you care, you know, I know people who talk about how furious they are at their fathers, it usually means they're dependent on their fathers. Whereas it's experienced as a negative anger, but it's a motivation of closeness. And that, again, goes to the fact of people having sex after they have an angry exchange, because they feel closeness. So all of this new stuff is kind of coming around to explain to us that we're stupid, but not so stupid after all. We're stupid in as much as we still use anger without insight to motivate ourselves to get off the ground because we're afraid we're going to sink into the hole. We don't know how to do it elsewise. So we use anger, and then it becomes addictive. We use anger to get ourselves out of feeling depressed. One of the things we always learned as therapists is they would teach us that anger was depression turned inwards. So we would find if somebody came in with anger, we would get them angry with depression. We would get them angry and the depression would lift. But of course, what we didn't know, stupid shrinks that we were, is that what we were doing is doing the very, very old chemical survival mechanism, which is motivating a person through stressors to get angry. And once they got angry, of course, the depression would lift. Didn't lift permanently. Because when anger is used as a way of keeping yourself undepressed, you have to keep doing it over and over again in order to keep the depression at bay. And when I say the word depression, I'm kind of talking about a physical, chemical, lack of energy depression, the slide.
I think it's interesting to think about anger, Armand, because many people really absolutely know how to express it, but I don't know that it always is a productive outcome. That's what makes it really difficult to deal with anger for most people. Yes, there are people that are very, very quiet and don't tend to get angry easily, and we know those types. But most of us feel frustration and want to express anger. It's really the technique of figuring out, once it's expressed, is this going to produce an outcome? I mean, we can talk about all the chemicals and all the things that are going on. But most of the time, people want to know, how can I use my anger productively? And when you have that level of consciousness and intention, which gets really, really highly fine-tuned, I think, for people to try to understand, how do I do this? How do I express it? It's an enormous amount of effort, and so I think more than anything, it's those kind of skills that people really wish they had when they were angry.
Well, you know, it's a good question, Stephanie, because I have a funny feeling that anger should never be expressed. I mean, if I'm thinking about it in the higher and higher level, the older I get, the less excuses I give myself for expressing anger. Because in all truth, most of the anger I ever feel is some avoidance of some other feeling. Now, why do you have to do it? Let's say you're a caretaker, you're a mother, and you've got a child who's doing things that are dangerous, right? And the child is kind of, you know, lighting a match. And the child lights another match, and you don't want him to do it. Now you get angry at the child, or you behave like you're angry, and you go at the child, and you yell at them and you say, don't light those matches, I told you not to. And that reacts in the child feeling overpowered and frightened, and they stop lighting matches. You may consciously think, this is what I'm doing. But you may not really feel angry towards the child, so you may use your anger. Sometimes you use anger to thwart off some kind of an attack. If you're standing somebody and somebody wants to hurt you, you stand up there and you use your anger. But most of the time that we try to express anger, we're really trying to express a feeling of vulnerability. If I were to think of all the things that a couple could say to each other, I get angry at you when you come home late for dinner, I could see them reversing that statement to be, I get sad and I get disappointed when I prepare a dinner for you and then you don't come home. And I get very upset. Same statement. But if you say, I get angry when you don't come home for dinner, then the other person feels like they have to respond to it. So sometimes I'm not sure. I'm beginning to believe that the expression of anger is difficult because it's always a farce. It's almost always a lie because you're not talking about your vulnerability. You're not talking about your feelings. You're talking about what the other person did, and it's all part of the blame game. I blame you, I blame you, I blame you, I blame you. And that could be part of it. So we're going to take your calls about all this, 212-209-2900. We're going to be taking your calls when we get back from our break. There are internal stresses, too. And the internal stresses are things that you make up in your mind. Now, according to recent research done in the United States, these bodies, there are neurochemicals called neuropeptides, and that they sometimes lay out in our body in a form of a stress. And sometimes it's your physical body that stresses itself in an attempt to rebalance itself. So sometimes the stress is not just emotional or psychological. Sometimes there are internal stresses that create a feeling of stress from which, again, could result in your feeling angry. So stress is something that's produced either as a perception of something that's getting in the way of your goals, but there are also stresses that we feel on the inside that we react to. For example, living in a smog-filled city. You live in a smog-filled city with the tension of the noise all around you, and you have all this noise, and you could be Buddha. You could be a saint. You could be anybody. It's going to take a toll on your body. It's going to have stresses in there. And you're going to find at times that you're having these explosive reactions, and you don't understand why. Because if you bombard your body with enough external stimuli, you're going to build an internal kind of stressor, which later will result in a reaction of some kind. But the ones I'm concerned about are the external, the imagined external stressors. The imagined stresses that are coming from the outside. The things we produce. The things we make up. It's all your fault stuff. You're doing it to me. It's your fault. Well, the minute we do that, my friend, no matter who you are, you're sunk. Because you're in the wrong place. Because it's using that as a reason to get angry, which is a way of you trying to escape your own depression. Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When we get back from our break, we're going to take your calls, but not before I play some music for Dan of the Bronx. Dan of the Bronx, I'm playing a piece of music for you today after our break. To Django, D-J-A-N-G-O, and you'll hear the great piano of Vince Guaraldi, but also the guitar, the strumming of his associate here. But I want to play you another part, because this came up from my good friend Dan from the Bronx, who admires Django, and I thought maybe, you know, our audience has never really heard raw Django, so I'd like you to hear Django. And Django was this guitarist who was remarkable all the way back in the 20s. And here's Django in the background on his guitar. Listen closely to his picking. Thank you.
can't give you anything but love. Oh, baby, ooh, that's the only thing I've plenty of. Oh, baby, dream of wild, scheme of wild, wish your divine baby happiness. And I guess gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby, beautiful. Diamond bracelets, Woolworth doesn't sell, my pretty baby by the roof. Till that lucky day, oh, your lucky day, you know darn well, oh, babe, I can't give you anything but love.
Just because we're taking a special musical break for you guys today, because we have done so little of it, my congratulations for hearing it. Such lovely stuff, huh? I mean, that's what music was meant to give us, the other side of it. You know, maybe music was meant to come in and say, yeah, we've got this old way, which is anger, to rev yourself up. But then we have this other way, which is music, to rev yourself down. Maybe music is the thing that holds our hands when we let ourselves go to sleep. And if you get depressed, then at least you've got some music. You feel like you still have company. Armand DeMille here, 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. Hello there. We're going to get you up there in just a second.
Hello?
Hi there.
Hi. You were commenting before about anger, and I just want to make one thing. I think you said that anger is depression going inward. And I always heard that it was, in fact, the other way. Depression was anger going inward.
If I said it the other way, no, I meant it the way you're saying it.
I thought so. And my feeling was when you said it's not good to
but
get
that's
angry.
But that's interesting. Wait, let's see. Maybe there's a reason for that mistake.
And maybe
it goes, anger
maybe
is,
both ways.
Maybe anger is depression going inward. Let's think about that. If you get depressed and you get more depressed and you're sinking, it produces this kind of anger.
Yes, they're loop systems.
Interesting.
In some ways. In any case, the point I usually make, and I work with people in who don't express anger, is trying to get them to recognize their anger, not so that that's what they do, but that it's a signpost for what the issues are. And I kind of parallel it to fire. It's like getting fire, and fire can be destructive or it can be useful if it's then controlled and focused. And if the anger becomes a way for them to identify what the issues are, then you can work with them, as you talked about, in trying to find some more reasonable or rational way to use that energy in a productive way, not in an angry explosion.
Well, good, good. And what's your name?
Steve Teach.
Steve. Oh, hi, Steve.
Hi.
Hey, Steve, so now here's a question. If you have a client who feels angry with someone in their family, and you believe that it would be great for them to clarify this, to challenge it, in the old school, we would have said, okay, it's good to talk to them and tell them that you're angry. See, in my new school, I go, you know, I'm not so sure about that anymore. Has your mind changed on that opinion? Do you still send your clients out to straighten stuff up by expressing anger? If a person's got disappointments with their husband, do you have them go in the door of anger? Do you have them go in the door of trying to talk about their vulnerabilities?
That usually depends upon the thing. I'm not really interested in people going out and expressing anger, but the anger is for them as an identifying tool of
what the issues are.
It's really for their own recognition, because by repressing it, it usually is a way of suppressing recognition of what's going on and not dealing with it.
So it's more that they should recognize it and feel it for themselves when they're with you, not necessarily take it out
right.
and put it out there in the world, because the world's not going to handle it, right?
No.
The world's not Steve Tisch saying, okay, I see you're angry, so let's look at what's happening here.
And the object is to figure out who they're dealing with and what are the ways best to deal with them.
Uh-huh. I understand.
You know, but I do things to try to, and I know you do too, to try to help people get their anger up so they can identify things and even sometimes take anger out on inanimate objects so the rage can get expressed and
it really helps when you
get past.
It really helps when you can get a person to just feel it.
And I've had some people, you know, I talked about throwing darts at pictures or things like that, that they've then, one of my patients even got into chopping up a picture with an axe. And it was useful because it got past the rage.
I used to love it. You know, I used to, when I was a kid, I know I've told the story on air before, I used to get big balls of paper towels and soak them in water. And then when I was working in an office, I would haul off. If I got really angry, I'd haul off and I'd throw them to the back of the door that was opening. And I'd whack, it would hit that thing. And I'd say, oh, that felt good. And then one day I did it. My boss walked in. Whack, hit him right now. It solved the job problem.
Yes. But I try something, you know, one of the easiest things for anybody to take a baseball bat or a plastic bat.
I like even better a tennis racket.
Or a tennis racket. Pound on their mattress.
That's it.
It's not going to hurt anything.
Get rid of the bed bugs.
Yes, and do other things. But it gives a chance to get past the rage. And the rage is probably the biggest problem because it gets triggered and that's less controllable.
Thanks for calling in, Steve. Steve Tisch, one of the better therapists out there. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello, yes.
Yes, how you doing? Very interesting series of programs you've been having about our chemical dependency on emotions and hormones, because I think ultimately that's what is going on with us. One interesting thing, though, you said about anger as a point of connection, that I think that it's somehow, before you said it a while back, because I'm dealing with that situation in my immediate household, and the anger as a point of connection is a very unique take on anger in a sense, because it's like you're not giving up the connection to the person, but you're still able to feel a sense of release because you still have that energy that's going on, but you're disconnected and connected at the same time.
That's absolutely true. What's your name?
My name is Joe.
Okay, Joe. It's Joe. Hey, Joe, you know, I'll tell you, Joe, it's true because for a couple of reasons. One is whenever I ask anybody if they say, I don't care, you know, about somebody. And the biggest disconnection with a person is that feeling of apathy, of not feeling connected.
Mm-hmm.
But if you are angry with them, you're connected.
Yeah, and I think that's the kind of experience that I'm going, because I mean I'm living in at this present moment, because it is an ongoing, what I call it is a PLA, a pervasive lingering anger.
A PLA, okay.
Yeah, and that's what's been happening, and it's just going on, but it's beyond me. It's like a lot of the situation, I'm caught in it because I'm married to this person and we're having an experience, but the experiences that brought the initial anger on is outside of my purview. I'm only dealing with it because it's here.
Joe, could you imagine the following? I mean, here's what I've seen in most people involved in divorce, separation, mm-hmm. or marital discord. If there were a pill, if there were an injection, mm-hmm. if there were a gas, a fume, a spray, mm-hmm. here's what I would do with every couple. I would have them hold each other, and I would have them cry. and not say any words. I'd have them hold each other and just cry. Cry their disappointments, not cry their rage.
Yeah.
Just cry. Get underneath it all.
Yeah.
Because it's the tears that are missing.
And I think
invariably I find that anger takes the place of tears.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Armand. You're absolutely right in terms of that. And I think it's just that feeling of vulnerability that produces that anger, because the vulnerability is like the slide that you use the term the slide. The vulnerability, acknowledging that vulnerability is the beginning of that slide. And if you can't see the acknowledgement of that vulnerability as a strength, then you're going to want to fight against it, you know, and you're going to push against it. And maybe that's where the anger starts to build from, not wanting to go. Because most people see you don't feel vulnerable. You have to tell somebody that they're hurting you. You have to tell somebody that you feel bad and all of those kind of things. And then, you know, you're giving them power. And you can't see it the other way around, where you're reaffirming what you actually, the actual feelings that you're going through. So you try to avoid them. And in trying to avoid them, then that's probably where that anger thing builds up, you know. So that's the place. And I really appreciate the fact that you're able to touch into this subject matter, because we are emotional addicts in some level or other.
That's right. And we're trying to evolve from that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, I want emotion. I want love in life.
Yeah, but
I want caring in life. But, you know, sometimes.
Yeah, I guess what I was trying to say is it's not about being emotional addict. It's a different when you can actually use the fact that you know about the addiction and you can use it. Just like you say, you can get angry with a child, but not really be angry. You could just use that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's like most of us, we're not using it properly.
There's a couple of recent articles, one by Molly Knight Raskin, R-A-S-K-I-N, who wrote this thing on identifying borderlines. And if you think about the life of a person who's got borderline personality, which means they spend 80% of their time being rageful and 20% of their time loving beyond belief. And it's like they have this attachment, huge separation. Attachment, huge separation.
Yeah.
It's so sad to see it.
I feel like I'm experiencing a similar situation right now. And it's heartbreaking, but there's only so much that you could do with it. I'm just trying to understand it and listening to you. I hear it more. I'm doing reading on my own. I'm using my own thoughts and insights to try to.
And don't be afraid to weep.
Well, I have.
Joe, that's
I'm still doing it.
Don't forget to weep, okay?
I'm still doing it.
Good. Nice to talk to you. Thanks for calling.
Okay. All right, Joe.
212-209-2900. We were speaking with Joe. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Hi, it's Paula. I love your show. A lot of things that I've heard, I can apply to myself.
Thank you, Paula.
I had this huge fight with my husband, like while he was driving, and first it was anger, and then it became rage. I started hitting him, and then he stopped. He tried to stop me, but he kind of missed, and he hit me. And that's like not my personality. I don't know where that came from.
Okay, well, let's think about this right beforehand.
Right.
You say it happened. What? Now, you're going to tell me there was a reason. You know, he said something or you said something?
The reason is that he's always changing plans at the last second.
Uh-huh. Okay, so here we go. A stressor is something that seems to get in the way of our anticipated goal.
Right.
So you have a husband who you married who promised you he would always be a stressor for you. He said to you, honey, let's get married and I promise I'll give you all the stress you need so that you could perceive me as a stressor and therefore get mad at me. So somewhere in life, you chose to have a guy who's going to give you an excuse to get angry, which says to me that underneath you, there's a part of you that feels like it could slide into a depression if nobody was there to catch you. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Do you?
Sort of.
Do you ever get depressed?
No. Before, I used to, like, many, many years
ago. Yeah, well, tell me about what you used to do many, many years ago.
When I used to get depressed, just stay in bed.
And just stay there and sink away, right?
Right.
And then you found relationships.
Right.
And relationships found a way to get angry.
Right.
And now you no longer have to stay in bed depressed.
Right.
You just get angry at your mate.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah, but then it's not good because...
You want to find another way.
I get rage
afterwards
because I feel like I've been unheard. And
yeah, again, you know, it's all on the inside of you.
Yeah.
And what I would suggest is you take a look at this, and this is one of the things where I would recommend a therapist who knows about both the chemistry of the human body and the chemistry of the mind, because you're a slave to your chemistry. Most of this is not psychological. Most of this is probably hormonal or chemical or neurotransmitted, and the habit that you have of escaping your own depression by getting agitated. That's where you get a good therapist who could help you through that.
Okay.
You know?
Okay, thank you.
My pleasure. If you ever need to get more information, send me an email, and we'll get you a bunch of names or something.
All right, thank you very much.
And thank you. So what's your name?
Paula.
Paula, thank you for calling in.
All right.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Anna. And before I ask you my question about anger, I just want to say, when you played that music before...
Which one?
The one you just played now.
Okay, I played two. I played one by Vince Guaraldi, and then I played one by I Can't Give You Anything But Love.
That one.
Yes.
Just in the introduction, I don't know what instrument it was. It was just music, but it made me feel like it was a merry-ground of happiness.
Let me see. Let's see what that was.
I don't know if it was a guitar.
This one right here?
Yeah, yeah.
That's Django Reinhardt. I'm going to play it just again for you at the beginning, okay?
Yeah.
Nice. A merry-go-round of happiness.
Of happiness, yeah. And what is that, a guitar?
Words,
yeah. Is that a guitar?
Yes, that's his guitar. Django Reinhardt.
I hear you.
Django Reinhardt, and if you look at his
music...
just
brought me right up.
Good. Good. Well,
listen,
look at
I want to ask you, I've had really good shrinks, and they will all say to me, you have so much anger suppressed from the early childhood. And I would ask them, how do I get in touch with it? Very hard, it went in very early. Would a tennis racket help?
Well, you mean the tennis racket kind of therapy? Yeah, with the right skill therapist.
Yeah, huh?
Sure, with the right therapist. There are a number of therapists around. Who know how to work with that stuff.
Why is it so hard to get suppressed anger up if you have so many occasions in life to get angry?
Well, maybe you're protecting somebody.
I am, yes.
Who are you protecting?
Well, I had a mother that was very funny and kind, but she was nutty, so she shamed us. But you couldn't hate her because she was too good at the same time.
I know that feeling.
Yeah, yeah.
And that when you're protecting somebody because you can't hate her, because she's too good, very often it buries this stuff all the way down there.
That's right. I don't usually cry, but that's right. I guess I'm ready to bring it up.
Well, maybe, you know, you're ready to find out. It was a tough road.
Yeah, tough.
Tough road for you, you know, Anna?
Yep.
I mean, your mother was a funny merry-go-round of happiness.
she was.
In a funny way, she was a merry-go-round of happiness.
She certainly was, yeah.
So the music, like, represents her.
You know, she would have us meet Roy Rogers when we were six, and Where the Hell in Queens in a mass crowd, and then she'd come home on the subway bombed with us. So it was, you know, it would kind of ruin the day for me and Roy.
I met Roy. I met Roy when I was a kid.
You did?
Yeah, I wonder if I met him in Queens. Well, your mom would have been bombed, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that helps that I know I'm protecting someone. So.
That's right, Anna.
All right, great. Listen, you're the only one that does this work on the airways. That is amazing.
Does what work?
You know what you're really doing. You're teaching. You're a great teacher in a way that's very, very seductive.
Yeah, well, I have a great team of people that I work with.
I know. I hear them.
You know, and constantly seeing new stuff that just boggles my mind.
I know.
And I have callers like you and listeners like you who, as far as I'm concerned, you're all the world.
Yeah, I know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Time for one more caller, if we can. Let's get one more caller in. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hi there.
Hi there. My name is Jay. Thank you, Armand. You've had a great show. I wanted to just kind of mention, what about anger and passion? And a misplaced passion around our anger. And
well,
applying that in a way that you have a choice. You know, okay, so what am I going to do with this anger? What am I going to do with this fire? What am I going to do with my passion?
It's really kind of interesting because quite a few people see anger as one of the passions and that there are many passions. And you're saying that maybe if you could redirect your passion, you won't have as much anger.
Right.
It's a very good, what's your name?
Jay Cardinale. I'm an expressive art therapist.
Jay? I'm sure through the expressive arts, you could find other ways to express those same passions.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you so much for calling in.
Okay, thanks for your show. And
sure, we have to be going. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. Be back with you on a Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.
Scheme of wild with your divine baby happiness. And I guess the best gee, I'd like to see you looking swell, baby, baby. Oh, diamond bracelets, Woolworth doesn't sell, my pretty baby butter. Till that lucky day, oh, the lucky day, you know darn well, oh, babe, I can't give you anything but love.